Welcome back to Insemination. My name is Laura High, your chaotic sperm donor baby of the podcast world, and it's time for me to inseminate myself into your earbuds. I really regret saying that. I am very sorry. Scratch that. Okay, I am very excited for this episode. We have an egg donor with us. We have Nurse Jess, a fantastic registered nurse who was also a former egg donor, who is going to talk to us about her pretty scary experience being an egg donor. If anybody's listening and they're not comfortable with medical procedures, please proceed with this episode with caution. And let's do a little bit of housekeeping. And October 15th is right around the corner for the very first ever Donor Conceived protest, where donor conceived people, recipient parents, donors, allies will be coming together to protest for donor conceived rights in New Orleans from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. right outside the New Orleans Convention Center, where ASRM will be holding their annual convention. We will be there to remind them that donor-conceived people should be their first priority. Not the clinics, not the banks. If you would like more information on this protest, please go to my website, www.laurahighfive.com. There is a tab labeled Protest. Go there. It has all the information on it. Please do the email sign up so that you can be kept up to date. Also, October 15th in New Orleans at the Howling Wolf at 8 p.m., I will be headlining. Please grab your tickets because after that protest, we are going to be needing some laughs. But now, let's get to the episode. Welcome to the podcast, Nurse Jess. Thank you so much for coming on today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
In case anyone doesn't know Nurse Jess is a fantastic content creator on TikTok who I got whose videos I got to see. You do such amazing advocacy, and I'm so grateful that you as a member of the medical community is, you know, actively combating misinformation. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It's a full-time job, that's for sure.
Oh, combating misinformation. I mean, that could be five full-time jobs all for one person. Yeah. Yes. But thank you. I do appreciate it because it's a tough job, and I'm just so grateful that you're doing it. And I'm so grateful also just very, I would say it, I feel like it sort of lines up almost amazingly because you are a former calling you a former egg donor. I don't know if this is the right word because you donated eggs as a known donor for a friend. So saying you're an yes. egg donor, but you have donated eggs. And the fact yes. that you are also a registered nurse, I feel like just adds so much. I mean, your story was already valid, but like now it like adds like a super cape onto it or something. And I would love to start at the top of your egg donation journey. How old were you when you were asked what went into making this decision?
Yeah, so it's kind of a wild story. So I was 21 years old. So I consider that being a baby now yeah. that I'm in my 30s.
Oh, 100%. I mean, to all of our 21-year-olds out there, I'm so sorry, but like, it really is. I look back at my 21-year-old self and I'm like, you were allowed to drink what?
Yes. So, my friend came up to me and, you know, I was very young and just said, "Hey, do you want to give me your eggs?" And I was like, "I mean, I'm not using them, you know, I don't plan to use them anytime soon. So sure, you can have them." And it was very nonchalant, didn't think about it. And she was like, "Wait, are you serious?" And I'm like, "Yeah, literally, you can have them." And it came with a follow-up later, obviously, with like a 5-page letter of her life and, you know, where her life was going. And what it came down to was just her life wasn't complete without these children. And she wasn't able to have children and whatnot. And she was married and very established in her life, and older than me. And so it just really hit me. And this person was very important to me. And so we actually decided to go through with the egg donation. And I truly felt like, I don't care. And at the time I wasn't a nurse, you know, I wasn't in nursing school. I was in my undergraduate program, like working towards a degree, didn't know what I wanted to be. I was 21 years old. Yeah. I didn't know what I was doing. And so, I ended up going through with it. And so that's kind of how it happened. It was very nonchalant. I knew the person and, that's how the journey started.
So then what was the next process? Did she already have like a clinic lined up? Did she have a doctor? How did that?
Did you have to get like a separate lawyer, or was everything taken care of through the clinic?
So everything was already taken care of. So her and her husband had already done multiple rounds of IVF, and they had already done multiple cycles of that and whatnot that had failed. So they had already attempted to do this on their own,
Got it.
and they had already discovered that they needed a donor. Like that had already been established that she could carry the baby, but it was something with her eggs that couldn't hold, the pregnancy. And so she needed an egg donor. And so she had already had a clinic, she had a doctor, she had everything lined up. So I really didn't have to do much besides donor,
Yeah,
and so
that's not a
basically,
small job. That's kind of a big
no.
one.
But 21 years old though, that's what it sounded like. I was like, oh, okay, well, I don't have to do much. I just have to go there and give my eggs, right? So in my 21-year-old mind, and like a lot of these younger women, that's how they kind of paint it, right? Just be an egg donor. It's simple. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, all right, I'll show up to the clinic. And I think in my friend's mind, that's kind of how it was painted to her too.
They make it like, I mean, if you look at any of the recruitment ads for egg donation, it looks like, oh my God, you're just gonna go in, give it sounds like it's a haircut almost with the way that they paint it, which
Literally.
is so simple. And it's complicated. I mean, this is a I mean, it's obviously like you're being a donor. Like there are massive, like what that means is huge, but also just the act of egg retrieval is a huge commitment.
Yes, and it's a lot of medications, it's a lot of appointments, it's a lot of changes that happen in your body, and none of this, we're going to get into this, but none of this was explained to me.
Are you
None of it.
so what was that first meeting with the doctor like then?
So first meeting with a doctor is just so like, unicorns and butterflies and everything's so beautiful, and it's just like you're just going to have some medications that'll help get the hormone levels up. We want to, harvest these eggs and be able to retrieve the eggs. And it's a very simple process. You just have to, make sure that you don't get pregnant during the process. You have to make sure that you take the medications when you're supposed to, follow everything we tell you. You'll come in for checkups. Like it's made it seem very seamless and just follow what we tell you. And I'm like, okay, like again, I'm 21 years old. I know nothing. The doctor tells me, and everything's going to be just fine. So we meet with the doctor, everything seems great, and I think it's fine. So the follow-up appointments come through after that, start with medications. They do a general, like, kind of physical and stuff like that. Everything seems fine. They make you do, I think I had to go through some testing, like STD testing, stuff like that, all
That
the
is our one,
basics.
that's our one regulation from the FDA. So, huzzah, you at least did that. I mean, when the doctor even told you that, like, it's medication, did you even know that you would be injecting yourself? Or did they make it sound like it was like a pill, like Advil?
I don't know. I think they did explain that some of it was injections. And at the time, I had a boyfriend at the time. And so I was like, oh, it's fine. Like, he can do the injections. Like, it'll be totally fine. Right. But again, I just was like, whatever. It's fine. Like, I'll just do whatever. But where it got weird, it gets weird. Okay. So everything is painted like, it's fine. We're just going to take these eggs and we're going to make a baby and it's beautiful and everything's great. And I have all these numbers, right? It was very hyper focused on these numbers. I remember that. And it's hard to remember the specifics because not trying to date myself, but this is over a decade ago. And so,
You're in good company. You're good.
So it was very focused on numbers, right? Like how many babies this clinic has made, right? We have high numbers, very good outcomes, and blah, 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 blah. I remember that being a thing. And so, like, they were talking about their success rates, high success rates on, having babies and stuff, because IVF is not cheap
No.
at all.
Oh my God. No, it's
It's so
hideous.
expensive.
It's hideously expensive. I mean,
Yeah.
that's always that to me is like a huge. It always kind of like what keeps me up at night is thinking about how much these fertility treatments cost with how unregulated the system is. And it's like you are paying hand over fist for no security, like
none,
no security. And it's terrifying how much these parents are literally like, I mean, some of these parents get a second mortgage.
I know.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I think my friend at the time paid $14,000 for one retreat, like one cycle, one whole cycle, and it failed. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I can't even imagine that.
Yeah.
So
devastating.
After we get through this whole process, right? This is where it gets weird. This doctor starts sending me home with the first round of medications.
Mm-hmm.
Medications. They're unlabeled. And when I say unlabeled, I mean, like, when you have a medication, it's usually labeled, like an actual label with, like, generic, you know, like the warnings.
Yeah, like a prescription label, yeah.
A prescription label. We're talking just, like, a label with someone wrote on it what it is. And I'm 21, and I know this is going to sound really silly to a lot of people, especially who know me now in my professional life. Like, how could you, Nurse Jess? Like, are you joking? But I was 21 also at some point, you guys. And I was like, okay, cool. This is whatever. I'm just going to go and inject it into myself. And I did.
Ooh.
And I did.
Yeah, that does seem like a little bit of a red flag. That does seem a little bit
huge.
Yeah, that didn't have an official prescription label.
And I'm talking multiple vials. And so I don't know. I can't explain that. I was 21, you know, at some point too. So that's why sometimes I can empathize with these boss babes and these MLM boss moms who sometimes take things, because I'm like, I was them too at one point, because it's easy to fall victim to doctors who sometimes don't always have the best intentions, because you just trust them, right?
Well,
you just
they're
trust
doctors.
Them. Exactly.
They have the diplomas on the wall. I yeah, absolutely. And the fertility industry, I will say, I do think like TV and movies have done a phenomenal job at painting the fertility industry a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I think that like how that industry has been portrayed in media has really screwed us all over.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at this point you've started, has there been any talk about side effects?
No.
You weren't warned about like anything?
None.
Nothing like
that. I was just told these medications are going to make you, you know, I think I was told it was kind of going to be like how I felt during a period. So like the hormones of maybe feeling like cranky or tired or crampy or something. Like, I was like, okay, whatever, you know, and bloating or something, like the basic things that girls go through. And I'm like, okay. And that was it, you know, and
ooh.
That wasn't really what I experienced. I experienced, you know, weight gain and other things too. But like at the time, I had no idea what was going on, you know, in my body, right? I didn't understand the hormonal effects of what was going on within my body. I was just doing the injections and just thinking, I'm helping my friend. I want to give her a baby. You know, I wasn't concerned of the unlabeled vials in the fridge, and I wasn't concerned of anything else. So,
did they ever bring up things like, I have so many questions now. Did they ever bring up like ASRM guidelines? Did they ever, anything? I mean, again, I know that ASRM is just guidelines. It's not actual regulations. But there was nothing, they didn't even mention ovarian hyperstimulation.
Never. Ovarian hyperstimulation was never mentioned until, you know, we can get into that, until I actually mentioned it after the fact, after I was really sick. They never mentioned it. The doctor never once mentioned
it. Okay. All right. So because usually it takes about like what, a month or so of injections?
I think so, around there.
Okay. So now they're actually going to go in, they're going to do the egg retrieval, which sounds so delightful.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds great. I sign me up. Yeah. Yeah, I really feel like egg donors, like when it comes to like versus sperm donors, I'm like, that you really get the short end of the stick there, versus like what sperm donors have to go through. I'm like, it's literally their favorite thing to do. Like, what? This is not fair.
I know. And I did have checkups in between time, by the way. So like between this, like, you know, there's a lot of checkups that happen. So like you get these injections, there's checkups, there's blood, you know, there's a lot of things that were happening in between time. And I want to
But no mention of side effects. Any of those meetings, they never mentioned side effects or anything like that. Okay.
Just kept keeping it kosher. Like, this is normal. Everything you're feeling is normal. This is a part of the process. I really felt like this doctor was really trying to gain this like kind of control over me. And kind of just, oh, you're fine. You're under my care. Everything's fine. I'm watching over everything, you know, and I felt like she knew she could do it because I was so young and dumb. I just was. I'll admit it. I was injecting unlabeled medications, you guys. Like, I'll own that.
How, you know? In your opinion, kind of looking back on it, what age do you think donors should be?
You know, age is tough to decide. I think, you know, age is, I really truly believe age is a number. Maturity wise, I was not mature enough to make that decision. I think some people do mature quicker than others developmentally. So I think that, like, that's a tough one. So maybe there needs to be some kind of assessment, right? Like, do you understand what this is? Do you understand? I don't know. Like, there needs to be some kind of assessment. 21 for me, 100% way too young. I didn't know what I was doing.
Oh yeah, no, I wouldn't have been. I don't think I would have been able to understand the gravity until I was like at least 25.
I feel like I wouldn't have understood until like maybe 35 for me. Like, I feel like it's really an in-depth thing. Like, and then to understand the side effects later on, right? We're learning now the long-term side effects of that. And
which
had
we
I known,
still don't know in general. I mean, we know what you have faced long-term, but like in general, there's been no studies of long-term side effects with egg donation. And you have so many young people just literally lining up and they're essentially being guinea pigs for what we're going to find later on in life. So we get to the egg retrieval. And we start, so if you wouldn't mind like describing what that process was like and what ended up happening.
So, you know, a lot of the egg retrieval, I feel like I've repressed because I got so sick afterwards, like, and it's not like a fun process. Like, you get in there and they've got all these like huge tools and stuff that you just don't want to see. And so, I wasn't awake for most of it. They kind of had like a conscious sedation for me. And so, but they took, I do remember they took 32 eggs in one retrieval.
Okay.
And I'm hearing mixed signals from some women that I know that are going through IVF right now. Some women that I know, they take 30 eggs and I'm like, oh my gosh, they did. Because for me, I've always been told that that's a lot of eggs to take in one retrieval because it can put your body in a, you know, hyperstimulation position. And what happened to me, that's what happened. So I've always been told that around 10, 15 is around a normal amount in one cycle. I don't know. I couldn't find, I know that you and I had talked about finding that evidence. I couldn't find sound evidence on that.
It's all over the place. It is all over the place as well. For anybody, again, when it comes to like this kind of like egg retrieval, like egg amounts, please look back and listen to my episode with Dr. Diane Tober. This is literally what she studies. And you know, we talked about how it could be different triggers in terms of like different drugs or specific drugs and stuff like that. So please check back. It's literally just a couple of episodes ago in this season. But yeah, I mean, I've spoken to egg donors who have given 80 eggs in one cycle.
Oh my gosh.
It does seem like there is a certain amount that depends on the body. I would love to see more research done if there is like a particular safe amount, like if there is a happy, like this is what, this is the safest amount of eggs to take, or I don't know. It's there again. We're sort of talking in like such abstract terms because of the such little research that has been done. So they took 30 eggs from you.
Yes. And then everything was fine in the clinic, right? I go home, and by home, I mean, I live like an hour away from the clinic. So okay. I live an hour away from the clinic. Boyfriend at the time takes me home. I'm recovering, whatever, from sedation, and everything's fine. I notice over the next week that I'm just kind of feeling kind of crappy, like just like sluggish, not myself, like whatever. And so I'm like, okay, this is probably just part of it. I just have to recover coming down off the hormones, like all this stuff. None of this was explained to me, by the way. I'm just assuming this is how I feel.
None of this was explained about aftercare, post-care, nothing?
Literally, like, have no idea. They might have explained, like, just get some rest or whatever it is. But I'm just assuming, oh, this is just probably how you feel after a period and, like, hormones. And I'm just putting it together in my mind that, like, okay, this is probably just how it is. Like, I'll just recover. I'll just chill, you know?
Oh, my God.
So week two, I'm noticing that, like, my stomach is kind of getting a little bloated, like distended a little bit. I'm kind of like, that's weird. Like I'm just feeling weird, you know? And then I start to notice I have a little bit of a cough, and then I'm like, okay, things are fine. It goes on, it goes on. Then the following week, I'm like starting to be painful, like in my back area, kind of where my kidneys are. I'm starting, the cough's not going away. It's becoming a wet cough. And, you know, timeline wise, that's where it gets a little blurry. But my pain's kind of getting out of control in my stomach. My stomach's getting more distended. I go back to the clinic and she's like, the doctor's like, this is all normal. Your body just needs time to recover. You know, this is nothing to go to the ER about. She was like so adamant on me not going to the ER, which I thought was very strange. And I was so weak. I was in so much pain. I was, you know, feeling like I couldn't breathe that well. Like, I didn't know what was going on. She never explained anything. She just said it was normal. Everything you're feeling is normal. It's normal. It's going to get better. Your body just needs to recover from the egg retrieval and the hormones. It's coming off the hormones. It's all normal. And this is in a clinic. Sends me back home, which is an hour away. I go back home and it doesn't get better. It just doesn't get better. It's getting worse to the point I can't stand up. My stomach is so distended. I can't see my knees, my feet. Like, it's so bad. So my boyfriend at the time, 2 days later, takes me back to the clinic. And there is a nurse there from a hospital. She just happens to be floated to the clinic that day. Thank God. I swear to you, it was like an angel that was sent there because she saved my life. I'm convinced. She was there and I could hear her in the hallway talking to that doctor. And I am at this point, I feel like on my deathbed. I couldn't lay flat at this point because I couldn't breathe laying flat. And I didn't know what was going on. My stomach's distended. I'm in extreme pain at this point. I feel like I'm going to die, literally, to the point where I had just accepted it because I had been in so much pain and it happened so fast that I was like, I can't live like this. I don't know what is going on. I hear the nurse talking to the doctor in the hallway. It's a small clinic. And she's like, this girl needs to be in the ER and she needs to go right now. There's something seriously wrong. And the doctor's like, that is my patient and she is not going to the ER. They're fighting in the hallway right next to my room. And the doctor was so adamant on not sending me to the ER. And the nurse was like, well, you need to fix this now because I'm telling you right now, there's something seriously wrong with her and she needs help right now. And I'm just like, I'm going to die. I'm going to seriously die. This is what's going, like, this is how I'm going to die in this clinic. This is where it ends. So she's convinced the doctor's like, I will treat her here, whatever. So they're like, we have to do a paracentesis, which at 21, I'm like, I don't know what that is. What is that?
What for all of our wonderful listeners, what is a paracentesis?
So a paracentesis is where they drain like fluid off of your abdomen. So what had happened was I was essentially having symptoms of ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, but the doctor refused to acknowledge that. So basically my circulatory system had shut down and I was gathering fluid in places where it shouldn't be. And so I had fluid around in my stomach cavity and it was just becoming distended. And it was like fluid in places it shouldn't be. So around my lungs, around my kidneys, my stomach cavity. So it was becoming distended. It was painful. Yeah. I couldn't lay flat because I was coughing. My kidneys had shut down. So basically she wanted to go and drain fluid off my abdomen and all of that stuff. And so in a clinic, by the way, that's not where that's supposed to be done, in my opinion.
No. Also, just in case, what is the definition of ovarian hyperstimulation?
So the way that I have been, it's been described to me is basically, where the hormone levels in your body, right, where I had basically been overstimulated. So too much hormones, where I had had all these hormone levels that were really high. And then all of a sudden we take all those eggs out, right? And just kind of drop those levels too quickly. And the body kind of goes into an overstimulation syndrome, I guess. Like, I don't really understand. I still don't really understand. I don't know if I'm the proper person to even describe it, because it's really difficult for me to still understand how this happens. I think the high levels of having that many eggs in my system, that many hormones, and then dropping it so quickly, puts that part of your reproductive system into an overstimulation. It throws the circulatory system part off, and then fluid collection starts happening, body system starts shutting down, organ system starts shutting down. And that's how it was described to me. And it's fatal in a lot of cases, actually. It's extremely rare, but in the cases that it happens, it can be fatal. And I can tell you guys right now, I thought I was going to die. I was convinced. And it was extremely scary.
Yeah. So you were, I mean, it's the fact that you were having such issues breathing, that's pretty scary. So you were there, you're in the clinic, not in the ER, which I completely agree, as somebody who has no medical training whatsoever. It does absolutely sound like, no, that's an ER moment. So you are getting fluid drained in the clinic. Are you feeling better? What's being told to you? Like, what's happening?
Well, no. So I'm in a bed in this like waiting area, and then there's like a procedure room area. So after I hear them arguing, the nurse and doctor, the nurse
must
comes
have
over.
Been a great feeling. God.
So awesome. I don't know why I became a nurse after this, by the way. I'm like, why? Maybe that's why I became a nurse. I don't know.
Well, because the nurse saved your life, because you had a nurse, like, advocate for you. Thank God for
Thank
if
God.
That nurse is hearing this. We love you. You're amazing. I hope you are doing well wherever you are.
Yes. I've met nothing but wonderful doctors except for that one. But yes. So this nurse comes over and she walks me into the procedure room. And I remember laying down and looking at her. And I just remember because they were going to put me out, because they put me out for the procedure. And I really honestly thought that I wasn't going to wake up. And I looked at her and I remember looking into her eyes, and this is going to sound so cliche, but I did. I said, please do not let me die. And she looked at me and she said, I promise you, I will not. And I believed her, because I believed that she would roll me to that hospital if she had to. Like, she was that type of nurse. She was like, I am not letting this girl die today. And so I don't remember any of it, because I was put out, and I woke up, I'm here.
That doesn't sound cheesy. That sounds, I can imagine anybody being in that situation, just because you are literally trusting these people with your life. And if I was in that situation, I would have 100% said the same thing to the nurse, going like, please. I've got food in the fridge. No,
yeah.
And I think that is such an understandable reaction. But you did wake up.
Yes.
And you're here with us, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So what then happened when you woke up?
I got out of there. I went home, and I was just like, I don't remember anything that happened after that, to be completely honest with you. And I think it's just because it was so traumatic for me. I remember recovering at home. I don't remember any follow-up appointments. They may have happened, but I think I just repressed it because it was just so horrific for me. I couldn't believe what had happened. I don't regret any of it. I really do not, because my friend has two wonderful children. I don't regret any of it, but looking back on it, I'm like, holy smokes. And when we started talking, I'm like, wow, like, that situation really was messed up, And so I don't remember what happened. I recovered at home. I got better, but it took weeks, if not a month, for me to get back to normal. And I'm talking like for my body to get back to normal, for the fluid to get settled, for me to be able to lay flat. I couldn't lay flat for months because I would cough, because there was fluid still hanging out. My body had to recover. Things had to recover. I missed like 3 weeks of school because I couldn't go to class. And luckily my professors at the time were very understanding, I almost died.
Yeah. Now there are a couple of things that I remember from the first time you shared the story with me, because you, I remember at one point you kind of thought about, should I like sue for malpractice?
So we tried.
Yeah.
We tried.
What happened with that?
So this is years later. So my friend and I kind of came together. We're like, you know, we should probably sue that doctor.
Yeah.
Like we should probably sue that doctor. And at the time, you guys, like at 21 years old, again, dating myself, we didn't have cell phones like we have now, social media like we have now. Like, I think we still had MySpace back then. Like, it wasn't like it is now. There wasn't tickety-tacks and all that stuff.
How long was this ago? 10 years?
I think it was like 15.
Yeah, no, it was MySpace. Yeah, that was MySpace, the beginnings of the Facebook, when Facebook was like required a college email to create an account.
So we didn't capture things, you know, the cell phones weren't like they are now. So I think that's kind of the downfall. Like you didn't think to take pictures of stuff and whatever. I wish it would have happened now, because we would have had all the evidence in the world.
Of course.
So malpractice is actually really hard to prove. It's really, really tough. And so when we did file it with the state, they did investigate. And guess what? The state's like, that we didn't find any evidence of this happening. Well, duh, she's not going to document. She almost killed me. Like, I mean, obviously there's no documentation that she's going to put down. Like, and then I almost killed this 21-year-old by giving her unlabeled medications and refusing to send her to the ED. Like, she's not going to put that in a note. I'm telling you what happened to me. And I can tell, like, there's just no good documentation, because she clearly didn't document it, which is also completely fraudulent. Like, I cannot believe there's no documentation of what happened to me. That's what the state came back with. She didn't document any of this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, that seems again, this is sort of like out of my bounds, but like that does seem illegal from a non-trained ear. The fact that like none of this was in a document going like, oh, we saved a person's life in our clinic today. We drained like God knows how much fluid.
A gallon of milk. That's what it was. Yeah. Like, that's a lot.
It was a gallon.
A gallon of milk equivalent to a gallon of milk. And for anyone listening, like from medically standing, that's a lot. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder you were in so much pain. The carrying around, like having an extra gallon of fluid and on you, pressing
also
up against your organs. Oh my God.
And also, you have to be careful when you drain fluid off of people's like cavities like that, not to drain too much too fast. So I'm not even convinced she did that right. To hear that she drained that much, and like, oh my gosh, she could have put me in another situation. Thank God I was young. I had that on my side, because it could have turned out to be worse, you know, because like you can't drain too much too quickly either. So I'm like, oh my gosh. But of course there's no record. So there is some legalities in that too, but it's like, well, how do you prove that? Like, I don't know how to prove it, especially when we don't have the technology like we do today to document it and, you know, all that stuff. So it came back as the state was like, there's nothing to prove here. And it's just, it was very disheartening. It felt very disheartening, and it felt very, I don't know how to explain it. I cried. I was like, this happened to me. And it feels like it's again, being like a victim where you don't believe the victim. And it's like, I literally almost died.
Having an extra gallon of fluid on you.
Also,
your organs. Oh my God.
And also, you have to be careful when you drain fluid off of people's like cavities like that, not to drain too much too fast. So I'm not even convinced she did that right. To hear that she drained that much, I'm like, oh my gosh, she could have put me in another situation. Thank God I was young. I had that on my side, because it could have turned out to be worse, you know, because like you can't drain too much too quickly either. So I'm like, oh my gosh. But of course there's no record. So there is some legalities in that too, but it's like, well, how do you prove that? Like, I don't know how to prove it, especially when we don't have the technology like we do today to document it and, you know, all that stuff. So it came back as the state was like, there's nothing to prove here. And it's just, it was very disheartening. It felt very disheartening, and it felt very, I don't know how to explain it. I cried. I was like, this happened to me. And it feels like it's again being like a victim where you don't believe the victim. And it's like, I literally almost died.
Yeah, no, I can fully understand why that would be. I mean, that's not disheartening. I feel like that's almost re-traumatizing to be told, like, sorry, kid. Yeah, I hear you almost died, but like, tough noogies, no record of it. We can't do anything. Like, yeah, that's traumatizing.
Yeah, it's almost like, shouldn't you be going after the doctor for not having a record of basically malpractice and what she did? It was just like, what? And how many other people did this happen to? That was my other question.
Do you know, did this clinic have their own bank, or did they have their own bank of donors, or did they buy donors from other banks?
I don't know. But you know, since you and I have started like discussing this and kind of, cause I haven't thought about it. Cause I've just always repressed it because I'm like, it's okay. Cause like, it's fine. Like I lived and these beautiful children are out there and I love them. They're great. You know, cause it's a very open type of thing. Like I know them and they, you know, all this stuff. But since you and I've talked, I have been like spinning the wheels a little bit and I'm like, I feel like I should be opening that box a little bit more. Cause that clinic's still there. That doctor's still there.
Oh.
And I'm a nurse now. I've been a medical professional for about 8 years. I feel like I know a little bit more. So maybe we need to revisit this situation. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know. The way it felt is that maybe they had a bank of donors, possibly. I don't know. But she was definitely trying to get me in there because she was very, like, you could donate to more, you know, like she was so.
She was trying to recruit you while you.
Yes. Yes. You know, she's like, you're young, all this stuff. And I just thought she was very strange, just a very strange person. Like, even my friend was like, I feel like she's trying to like buy you or something. I'm like, I feel like I don't know what's happening here. Like, I'm just trying to give you some babies. I'm not trying to have a baby out there with all these people. Like, you know,
really inappropriate. Like, you're coming in specifically to be like a known donor for a friend. Yeah, that's very inappropriate of the doctor to do that. That feels real skeevy.
She gave me like information on being a donor, of course. Like it was like a marketing, like, by the way, I know you're here for your friend and like you're not feeling well, but like here's some information on becoming like a donor for our clinic. And I was like, that's like a no for me for sure. Like,
I'm going to say something that I apologize because I'm going to go just into. Have you gotten on 23andMe or Ancestry or any of the DNA sites?
No, but I know what we're going with this. And I agree with you because I feel like I probably should, because 32 eggs is a lot of eggs
for
because I'm going to tell you something else that's weird. And I don't know all the details. So this is going to sound really terrible. Just like the ovarian hyperstimulation, like understanding, I should know more about it. But
for anyone who is like, wait a minute, what just happened? I'm going to fully cushion this of, I've never found any truth to this. I've only heard rumors. I've only heard whispers. I've never spoken to somebody who this has happened to. There's always been rumors of it that potentially hypothetically Jess's eggs may have also been sold to other people without Jess's consent. There has been, we've always heard rumors of people going like, oh, I went in to like donate for my friend and my friend only. And then they go on 23andMe and then two more kids popped up. There's been those rumors. I've never spoken to anybody, but it would be something where I would absolutely double check given everything else that you have gone through. I would just want that peace of mind.
Yes, and it has crossed my mind because I'm like, 32 eggs,
Yeah.
We only had a couple retrievals, and like how many failed? Like that just seems, it just seems a little sketchy. It seems a little weird, right? I have no trust in this doctor, just so we're clear. And I don't think I should have trust. So yeah, it has crossed my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
And again,
why would
like
we
said,
throw out good eggs?
21-year-old eggs, prime eggs.
It's why hard to get good eggs.
Mm-hmm. Especially yeah. when fertility doctors usually go off the numbers, right? The percentage, and so it has crossed my mind. I think it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, I don't want to even think about it.
Yeah.
But again, since you and I have talked and now I'm an actual adult, sort of, I am like, I think I can cross that bridge now. I think I'm mature enough where I could handle that and cross that bridge.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's time to open that box a little bit and revisit that clinic and be like, hi, is Dr. So-and-so still working here? I would love to talk to her.
Oh, if you need help for that phone call, please know that you would have the full support of the donor conceive community, and I would be right there with you. You need help with that. We would be there to back you up with that one. Can you not be alone?
Can you imagine the Netflix series on this? It would be insane. Like if I could gather the information, this would be insane. Cause I feel like a lot of people probably have had similar experiences. I hope not. But similar experiences of just like kind of the realm of this world and the information, the lack of information you've been given as a donor, and because they sell it like it's a beautiful thing, and you go in thinking like,
yeah,
and it's a moneymaker, right?
Oh, it's unicorns and sunshine that you get paid handsomely for. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a chunk of time. We won't date you.
Yeah.
Since you have done this. And I say this without saying there hasn't been any research on long-term side effects of egg donors, but how has your body recovered from then? What have you experienced? What has your body gone through? What has been your personal story?
Yeah. So I was told after that happened when I was younger that my OBGYN was like, I don't know if you can have kids because, you know, ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome affects, you know, the ovaries, and we don't know. And since you're so young, you're not trying to have kids, obviously we're not going to know. So when that time comes, then we'll know. And I'm like, that is a weird answer, but okay. You know, I guess when I know.
Oh my God. When I'm trying. Well, that's terrifying to put over you.
Right. So I was with someone for many, many, many years, and we tried to have kids and we couldn't, right? And so I just assumed, well, I guess that whole thing that happened back when I was younger, it's true. I just can't have kids, and it's because of this and whatever. And I didn't go into all the testing because it's expensive. And I was like, I just am going to assume that that happened. And so long story short, you know, we break up, whatever. And then I meet someone and I get pregnant. And so I'm like, well, I guess it wasn't me. Maybe it was him. I don't know. So I just never really went into the official testing. I don't know. And I have a baby and I'm super thankful for that, whatever. So I don't know how my body's recovered. I'm guessing okay. You know, I haven't gone through official testing. I haven't gone through like, what do the eggs look like and stuff? Cause I just can't afford that. Like,
yeah,
I can't justify that cost, I guess. I do have one embryo left from that retrieval years and years and years ago. And that's kind of a whole thing. It's legally mine. And that was done for the sole purpose where it was signed over to me because just in case I couldn't have children, right?
Okay.
So that was decided between my friend and I. And that has been kind of a topic of discussion recently on what's going to happen. We don't know. We don't know what to do. And so, that's a more fun discussion because that doesn't come with so much like animosity towards a doctor or whatnot. That's like kind of more of a positive discussion, but that's a tough part of it too, that you don't think about with egg retrieval. Like what if you have embryos left over? Like what do you mm-hmm. do with the embryos left over? And
if there were people who were thinking about egg donation and they were listening to this podcast, what would you tell those potential future egg donors to, like, what would be the red flags that you would tell them to look out for and what they should be asking their doctors?
I would definitely tell them, do not follow the money. The money is, I understand, and this wasn't my situation, obviously. I wasn't offered the money, right?
Yeah.
But I see those marketing schemes, $5,000, $10,000, become an egg donor. Come on, girl, come give me your eggs, right? Like, I get it. That's a lot of money. But that to me is a huge red flag, huge red flag. Yeah. I understand it's a lot of money and being a broke college kid, I get it. That's a red flag. First red flag is money being promoted for egg donation. The other thing too, is I would make sure that you understand the implications of it. So when I say implications, I mean, what is the long-term effects? Everyone talks about long-term effects. This has been a big thing since the pandemic started. What are the long-term effects of a vaccine? Well, what are the long-term effects of a hormonal injection? What are the long-term effects of egg retrieval? We don't always know those long-term effects yet. They are trying to be studied. We need more studies on it and whatnot. So unless there's a really good reason, in my opinion, to do this egg donation, and I'm not saying that we should stop egg donations altogether, right? Like, there are some really great reasons for this to happen. There are some really miracle reasons, and I don't think it should stop altogether. But those reasons need to be very sound and they need to be very solid for you to really consider this. I also think that you need to have a doctor that's very credible and isn't trying to manipulate you, like in my situation. And so you can check into the doctor's credentials. You can check into the doctor's background, their track record. You can check into reviews. You can check into a lot of different things. I think that also checking the information they're giving you. Ask for information, ask lots of questions, cross-reference those documents they're giving you, cross-reference the information, ask a trusted doctor that you have, like your primary care physician, get a physical done. You know, you have to kind of do everything that I didn't do. I didn't do any of this, you guys. I'm coming full disclosure as a registered nurse now. I was just like, oh, sure, unlabeled stuff, inject, be crazy. And then that's what happened to me. It's anecdotal. It's one situation, but it could happen to you too. And it's really scary stuff. And I could have lost my life. Cross-reference, ask lots of questions, ask about these things. And if they are not giving you this information up front and they're not telling you about the risks, but they're only feeding you the benefits, immediate red flag.
I would have to say, like, personally, and I know that this is not, I would say, happy or something. I would say it would definitely be more of my, like, depressing opinions, but I would not at this moment in time, until actual research has, like, long-term research into long-term side effects have been done, until we have, like, a stack of studies that we have, I would not recommend anybody to do egg donation to a cryobank or clinic. I would say maybe for a specific friend or a specific relative. I'm like, okay, yes. And with a shitload of research, as you're saying, to that doctor. But I am too concerned about the health and safety for egg donors to ever say, like, yeah, maybe you can do it. You can totally be an egg donor and stuff like that. I know that that's a very heartbreaking thing to hear for a lot of the recipient parents out there. And I know that that's hard, and I apologize, but it's just, we clearly are not taking the egg donor safety into account, and they matter. They're not just supplies. They're not just material. These are human beings, and their bodies are greatly affected by it. And the doctors are sort of just going, like, well, I think it's fine. And we're going to find out 10, 20 years from now, we're going to have significantly more research on our hands into long-term side effects. And I do worry. I really worry at that point what we're going to find out. And again, it's I say that as somebody who has spoken to a lot of egg donors, who have spoken to so many egg donors in the United States who have gone through ovarian hyperstimulation. I mean, I've interviewed now, I'm trying to think how many egg donors. I mean, I would say 90% of the egg donors that I've interviewed have all had ovarian hyperstimulation. You have had the worst of all of them, the worst case of it. But I mean, every single one of them has gone through it.
And you have to think
that I've interviewed. Jeez.
How is it happening? And I'm not saying that there aren't good fertility doctors out there.
No, there are. There absolutely are. But 100% they don't wear a hat. You can't go like, oh, well, there's the green hat doctor. We know that they all buy the green hats and they all walk around going, I'm the doctor. There is, and that's the hard part, is I have no idea where to tell people to go, like, okay, you'll be fine there. You'll be fine. I have no clue. With the lack of regulations, I can't tell you. I can't guarantee you anything.
Yes. And it's very inconsistent, and that's the problem. And so you have to know. The burden falls on the patient, unfortunately. The burden falls on the egg donor to know these red flags and to know that if those doctors are feeding you benefits, I would see that as a red flag. And I should have seen that as a red flag. This place was painted as like, this is a beautiful, magical place where we're just going to grab those eggs, girl, and make life, you know, it's fine. I didn't hear any of those risks. And so I value doctors who are like, hey, there's lots of benefits, but let me go ahead and talk about the risks real quick, because it comes with risks. Yeah. And are we okay with this? And let's explain this. And if this happens, and it's very compassionate and whatnot, because they do have time to be compassionate in those type of environments. And so in my opinion, you know, these docs should be doing that. There are docs that do that, but it's not, like you said, they're not these factories that should just be pumping out eggs everywhere. That's not how we should be treating them. Then it becomes an unethical situation. And every patient, egg donors are patients, should be treated ethically. And if we don't treat them ethically and just continue to do what we're doing, how many more women are we making, you know, infertile? We're just creating more problems, you know, or potentially creating more problems. And so it's just a very... it's crazy to me just the way they market it. And I'm sitting there thinking, do these girls even know, you know, like this is so crazy. And the cancer risks, potential cancer risks that come with it. Right.
And again, like Dr. Tobar also covered this. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence into egg donation causing like cervical cancer. And again, we just don't know. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that would, in my opinion, say, oh, we need to really look into this, but it is not something that has been proven. So please, when you're listening to us talk about that, please know that. But
I will say anecdotally, this is not sound evidence. This is my experience. Mm-hmm. I have been dealing since I've been 21 with pre-cancer cervical cells. Since egg retrieval and everything and all that stuff happened, I've been dealing with pre-cancer cervical cells since then.
And you were in your 20s?
Yes.
Does cancer run on either side of your family?
Not cervical cancer or anything like that. So again, it's anecdotal. Okay. We're not going to use this as sound evidence. I don't want people to run and be like, Nurse Jess said she had ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome and now she had cervical cancer. That's not what I'm saying. It could be coincidental. It could be lots of different things, but I'm just saying, like, when I start to get my wheels turning and I go down the rabbit hole too, I go down the WebMD hole too, you guys, even though I'm a nurse, I do it too. I'm like,
Well, and there's been other egg donors who have also come forward being like, they found cancer cells. They found masses and there's no family history of it. This all happened afterwards. And the fact that you were going through that in your 20s is very strange. But what this again tells me is more evidence as to why we need to do the research. And I do personally feel like it's very telling the fact that the fertility industry is not doing the research.
I know.
Is not doing it. That is problematic. And they're going around saying, well, there's no long-term side effects. Well, there's no long-term side effects because you haven't looked into it.
Yeah.
That's why. It's very easy. to claim there's no evidence when you don't do the research.
Just like you can claim there's no malpractice when you don't document it. It's the same thing.
Yeah. But kind of to piggyback off of the red flags, countries like Spain have made it illegal for banks to try to send recruitment ads to colleges or anything like that. And right now in the United States, the amount of banks and clinics that literally go to college campuses for set up recruitment pop-up tents, who are invited to speak into lecture halls, who plaster the campuses with recruitment posters. That is a red flag. That is absolutely a red flag. The fact it is predatory behavior for them to be doing that to college campuses. That is predatory behavior. That is a red flag. I would not ever trust a clinic or a cryobank that is advertising in such a manner, who is flashing a paycheck. The amount of videos on TikTok that I see that are literally donate your eggs and buy Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, I know.
Or pay for your spring break. It is absolutely absurd. And that to me is the biggest red flag.
I don't understand why we don't have more regulations on that. But I mean, I do, because we're in the United States and I feel like we're always last to like do anything like it. But it's to me being going through the experience that I've gone through and literally almost losing my life over it.
Yeah.
It's gut wrenching. Because I'm like, these girls don't know any, I didn't know any different.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I can't fault them. It's not their fault. I did the same thing. It's predatory, like you said.
Yeah.
And they're preying on people that they know they can get. I fell for it, you know, in a different way. Had my friend not come to me and I saw a poster for $5,000 or $10,000.
Oh God.
I would have done it.
Absolutely. And to the recipient parents, what I would also suggest to you is when you are deciding which clinic or cryobank to use, because if you're looking for egg donation, what I would do is go on to these clinics and cryobanks, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and I would look at their recruitment ads. Because you don't want to buy a clinic or a cryobank that has such a disregard for your donor's life. Look at those ads, because if they are disregarding your donor's life, the chances are they're going to disregard your child's life as well, because they're looking at these bodies as literal, just like material items. They're not looking at these people as sentient human beings, and it will tell you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So really look at the recruitment ads, and that will give you a signal whether or not, ooh, I don't want to work with this cryobank. I don't want to work with this clinic. I understand it's a lot of emotional labor while you are, I'm sure, forking over a lot of money. I know that emotionally it involves a ton of labor. I know that. But again, the long term, what this means long term is absolutely worth it. It is absolutely, because to those recipient parents, imagine your child connecting with your donor years, decades from now, and finding out the amount of long-term side effects she went through. Imagine hearing physically what she went through, what it did to her body, what she had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that feeling of knowing that you, in essence, like, were a part of it. Not directly. I know you didn't do it, but you were a part of that machine. That's not going to be a good feeling to know that what the cost of your child did to this body, did to this human. And I know that that's a lot I'm asking. I know that that's a lot of emotional labor, but I do promise it is worth to do that emotional labor now than to have to deal with the consequences later. You got to think about your donor, not just as an object, not just as a weird tangential thing. No, these are real human beings. These are young people. These are 18, 19, 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
Think about them as well. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's so scary. It's so scary to think it about is. How many other women have gone through what you have gone through, and
I didn't really talk about it. This is what's also crazy. I haven't really talked about it until you and I started connecting. Mm-hmm. And I was like, gosh, I like really don't talk about it. Why don't I talk about it? And I'm like thinking, I'm like, I've repressed this because of how traumatic it was. I think I just was like, well, whatever. Like, it turned out fine. And I don't regret it. Like, I clearly do not regret it.
Like, whatever. It's fine.
Like, it's fine. Well, I didn't die, so everything's fine. You know, like, that's just how I live my life. And I started thinking about it as you and I talked. And it's been very therapeutic, actually. It's been very, very good to, like, really talk about this and think about, like...
traumatize you or anything.
No. Like, that's why I wanted to make it clear. Like, it's not been bad. Like, this has been a very positive thing. And so I'm like, man, like, this is really bad. And this is really good to talk about because really, like you said, as a medical professional, one of the things I take so serious, and I think you and anybody who follows me knows, education is huge. And I believe in educating the public, educating people. That's one of the biggest jobs as a nurse that I have. This falls into that realm, and I can personally connect to it because I went through it. And so educating yourself helps, not 100%, but preventing situations like this from happening. And so it's a scary situation. And again, I don't want to take away from donating eggs in certain situations because it is a beautiful thing, but there's safeguards that can be in place, and they need to be.
Absolutely. And I think that that's what it is. And, you know, I always repeat, this is not, my goal is not to end donor conception. It's not to end egg donation. I just want to make sure that it's safe and ethical for everyone involved, including the donors.
Yes.
Especially because egg donation is extremely invasive, very different from sperm donation. There needs to be these studies. There needs to be these safeguards for everybody who is donating eggs. There has to be. And I do want to thank you, Jess, for kind of opening up this box again with me and talking about this, because I do think even your story alone does so much good and so much education for recipient parents and donors, because we obviously do not want what happened to you to happen to anybody else. And to ensure that, like, if they are going to be a known egg donor, which if you want to be an egg donor, that is the way to do it, is to be a known donor like Jess. That is absolutely how you do it. And we just want to make sure that everybody is looking out for those red flags, who is making sure that they are advocating for themselves, because this industry, the fertility industry, is so unregulated. You need to be careful. You have to be careful. And I know that that's a bummer, because I know you're looking at that $10,000 check and you're like, oh my God, I want that money. And I get it. But that money is not going to be worth it if it ends up getting you really sick and you just end up using it for, like, medical care.
Yeah.
It's not going to be worth it. You got to ensure that you're going to be safe. So Jess, thank you again for coming on this podcast and sharing your story. Are there any final thoughts that you would want to share to potential egg donors or recipient parents?
I just want to share that, you know, I am an open book and I am happy to answer any questions. I know sometimes it's hard to speak up. I know sometimes it's hard to know who to ask questions to. You know, as someone that's gone through this, as someone who has a very close friend who's also gone through this, and I've seen both sides of it, we have a very open relationship with, you know, the children and my friend and myself.
It's relationship.
It's so cool. And obviously, you know, it's just a really cool thing. Like, it's, some people are like, that's so weird. I'm like, it's really not weird. It's a very cool dynamic and everything else. But my final thoughts are just to, if there's any questions, like, email me or message me or whatever. If you guys have questions or have follow-up, I am happy to talk about this. I'm happy to give you information, give follow-up information, help you work through these thoughts. If you're thinking about donating, if you have anything that, like, doctors come to you or you're like, hey, is this a red flag? Please message me. I feel like the more we talk about this and the more that we as women kind of have this open dialogue, the less chance that this is going to happen to someone else. And so for me, it may take me a couple of days to get back to you, but please message me. Instagram is the best way to message me. I'll get back to you on there, but I believe it's, gosh, now you're testing me. I think it's JES_SS_2019.
Okay, I tell you what, I will double check it, and I will, as everybody knows, I film all of these episodes, so it's going to go up on YouTube. So I will make sure that it's on the screen. I will also make sure that Jess's handle is in the caption. So if you do need to message Jess and you have any questions, she's there. Because again, not just a former egg donor, but Jess is a registered nurse. Because we, yes. So the fact that she is a medical professional just is so wonderful and delightful. And please go follow Jess for all of her wonderful, amazing content about stopping misinformation. It's so amazing to see. And you need just so much support from the public because, ooh, you got to deal with a lot of crazies on the internet. So I want to see my people going and supporting you because you're just fabulous.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Jess, thank you for your time. Thank you for opening that box with us. And I ask for anybody else who is ready to share their story to share their story. Because what we have seen with the fertility industry, a couple of stories, the amount of impact one story can make is huge. So thank you, Jess. And everybody have an amazing, amazing day.
Thank you.
Thank you.